You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Want to witness the world's biggest football game? Head to iCanWin.com.au, predict Australia's score with a crystal ball, and it could be you and a friend at the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 semi-finals, all thanks to McDonald's. Maccas, together and loving it. TNCs apply.
Sunday crunch time.
Well, Lewis runs straight at it, hits it straight through the middle, and they've got a star on their hands at Hawthorn.
Pissed away by Tommy Jarvis. Ball goes out of play. Siren sounds. And it's the Hawks by 64 points. Undefeated.
Well, what a perfect start to Sam Mitchell's coaching career. He is 2 from 2. The Hawks stunning last year's preliminary finalist Port Adelaide last night at Adelaide Oval. Have we underestimated the Hawks' young list? And are there alarm bells at Alberton as the Power remained winless in 2022? Speaking of new coaches, Craig McRae has also had a perfect start at Collingwood. The Pies defeating the Crows by 42 points at the MCG. Not even a fire alarm could slow down Collingwood's brigade of young guns.
Side bottom bumps it up into the pocket. It took a bounce past a few. It's still to be dealt with. Lipinski paddled it against the boundary for Henry. Oh, Henry! Dear Henry from the boundary has hooked a quite miraculous goal through. And the Pies are off and gone.
Welcome to Sunday Crunch Time. Great to have your company wherever you are listening today. We are live from Marvel Stadium as we count down to the clash between North Melbourne and West Coast this afternoon. Nat Edwards and Josh Jenkins with you this morning. Liam Pickering to join us a little bit later on in the show. And JJ, round one was incredible, but it's fair to say round two is matching it for storylines. What a weekend we've had so far.
Yes, good morning, Nat. Good morning, everyone listening. Yeah, the storylines have been the highlight this so far this round, and we've still got a handful, still got three games to go, including one here at Marvel Stadium, which I hope you've done your homework, because there's going to be a few guys running around wearing number 50, 51, 52 and 53 that we will have never seen before. So there's plenty happening, and nothing more so than what happened at the Adelaide Oval last night. I was calling the Melbourne and Gold Coast game, which was a good game of footy, but had one eye sort of catch the scores, and you're sort of thinking, hang on, what's going on over there? And your Hawks, they were sublime. But Adelaide, the town, the city, will not be a pleasant place this week.
No, it will not. I think there are a few concerns at Port Adelaide. I mean, to be fair, they were undermanned, and we'll delve into all of that a little bit later on. But for Hawthorn, just a stunning start for Sam Mitchell. And not only Sam Mitchell, but Craig McRae and Michael Voss, the three new coaches, all perfect starts so far to their coaching careers. Yeah. It's a dream, isn't it?
Six and zip, those three. They'll be thinking, how long has this been happening? And Michael Voss has had a go at it before. But I think the thing is with all three squads, we can see a really distinct new game style with them. You know, Collingwood are playing a really chaotic style, very Richmond-esque. And we're seeing, I think the Hawks, their ball use stood out last night. Sam Mitchell, one of the greatest exponents of right and left foot kicking and handballing. We're seeing some of that rub off. Now, it's a lot to extend the fact that he's been there in charge for 6 or 8 months. We can't just say automatically there are all the players are better kicks, but you can see them the desire, the intention to play in a certain manner. So Yeah, those three new coaches will be pretty happy waking up on a Sunday morning.
And then, of course, we can't mention round two and what's happened without reflecting on Buddy Franklin. Mm. I mean, Friday night was just something else. We'll probably never, ever see anything like it again. I was very jealous of everyone who ran out onto the SCG. I wanted to be out there with them. I did have some concerns, though, for Buddy. He handled it really, really well. But I reckon a couple of times on his face, you could see some concern and anxiety.
Yeah, I must admit, I was a little bit concerned because, I mean, the sheer mass of people and how much sort of force there would have been with bodies being pushed and prodded. And, I mean, I haven't actually heard any negative stories coming out of it. No. I haven't heard of anyone getting injured or any, you know, fighting or anything like that. So, I mean, there were so many people out on the field. I thought they would have called the game. I genuinely didn't think that they would have played the 5:55 to go. The game was basically over. I'm pretty sure Chris Scott and the Cats boys would have been saying, look, the game's over. We don't need to run back out there. Because there would have been, you know, the fitness staff would have been panicking, thinking, oh, we've been standing around for 30, 35 minutes. And, I mean, in the end, all's well that ends well. It was a great scene. There's been some amazing photos put up on the social platforms. And, it's a shame we weren't there to be a part of it. And you are right. I don't know that it will ever happen again, unfortunately.
Oh, it was just crazy. Like, you're hearing stories come out of it now. People having picnics on the SCG. There was a lady who scattered ashes in amongst all of it.
Wow.
Yes. Which is, you know, very interesting to say the least. You wouldn't want to cop some of that if the wind blew that in your face. But yeah, it was just insane. And then Ollie Florent and Chad Warner ending up on the outside of the SCG and then trying to get back in. It was all happening, but it was brilliant. And I think, you know, when I reflect on Buddy Franklin, sometimes, I mean, 580 of his 1,000 goals were kicked, obviously, in the brown and gold, but you sort of took it for granted as a Hawks fan, having Buddy and even Cyril Rioli do what they did, and you probably didn't appreciate it as much as we should have as Hawks fans.
Mm. Is he a? I guess the premierships tell the story, but I was going to say, ask you whether he's a Hawk or a Swan, or he's genuinely both, because he hasn't tasted the ultimate success as a Swan, but he's. I mean, the move's been more than a success because of what he's done for the sport up there in Sydney. And I heard some commentators speaking earlier in the week about Sydney have always needed that superstar, that X factor. And he's provided that since he's gone up there for the 7 or 8 years, the best part of a decade. He's been incredible. And the thing that not gets lost, but the thing that's still relevant, he kicked 4 goals the other night. He's still... Whilst his body holds up, forget about the age and the contract and how much he's getting paid, he's still one of the best key forwards in the game.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
100%. And, you know, the things that he does, they're still so freakish. I know that he, you know, it would have been nice if it was a snap for goal 1,000 rather than, you know, a set shot. But he's still got it. He still has to take, you know, one of the best defenders going around. And no doubt, I reckon he could go around next year.
No doubt. Because... And you said it. He attracts so much attention. For one, he still definitely commands the number one defender each and every week, if not another. There's always focus on Franklin and where he goes and who's going to take him if he goes high, who's going to play on him if he stays close to goal. And the thing the other night, he was. I mean, I wish I was that could be that calm on the path to 1,000. He didn't look like missing. No, and he's been an inaccurate kicker at different stages of his career. I think that's the thing that's that has improved the most as he's gotten older, is he's so reliable in front of goal. Yeah. Now, he doesn't miss many at all that he should kick. And he still kicks the freaky, but he's a really accurate shot for goal. And he didn't look like missing the other night.
No, and the best thing too about the Swans is they don't rely on him either, because Luke Parker, 5 goals last week, Isaac Heaney doing some insane things as well. I mean, this Swans side it's brilliant, and it's an exciting brand of footy to watch. I just love watching those young kids get about.
Yeah, they're a good group of young players. In fact, they're better than good. They're a really exciting and they're a progressive group, and there's no ceiling on them. We've seen over the past few years that, you know, teams jump up and can do great things and make grand finals and win premierships. So there's no ceiling on what they can do. They certainly wouldn't be putting a ceiling on themselves. They would still be definitely, I think from Monday to Friday, that club would still be a really education focused team. You know, look at some clubs, and you know, I spent my past couple of years at the Cats, where a lot of older players, and there's less meetings and there's less education because the guys are older and they're experienced and understand. Whereas Sydney, such a young group, even though a lot of those young guys are playing great footy, they'd still be, this is how we want to defend, this is the education, this is how you should prepare yourself and diets and all those sorts of things. So they're, you know, still learning the caper, but on Saturdays and Fridays, they're going out there and beating really good teams on their merits.
The other game that happened yesterday, the Brisbane Lions beating Essendon by 22 points. The Lions 2-0, and Essendon, unfortunately, yet to win a game in 2022. It was a tough ask because the Brisbane Lions, as we know, are going to certainly be a contender this season. Joe Danaher, the first time he's sort of played against Essendon in Melbourne, which is always something to, you know, get the popcorn out and see what happens. But the Lions just getting the job done. I mean, the Bombers started on fire in that game, but just fell away again.
Yeah, well, the first quarter, Essendon were plus 14 contested possession, plus 10 clearances, amazingly plus 14 inside 50s in the first quarter. But from there on, it was all Brisbane Lions. So Brisbane won the scoreboard by 44 points in quarters 2, 3, and 4. And I didn't see much of that game. I got home and I saw the score and I thought, hello, what's going on here? The Bombers are up and about and the Lions are, you know, a little bit sleepy. And from the moment I got home, Brisbane just completely dominated. And it was a shared the thing about the Lions that I've been query of is that ability for them to bring each other into the game and make the extra play. And yesterday, you know, Danaher, I thought he had opportunities to swing onto that left and take shots from 55, but he was able to find the free teammate. And that's the thing that they were able to do yesterday that sort of excited me the most. They made each other better. And they shared the load yesterday. They got, you know, multiple goals from McCluggage, kicked three, bobbed up and kicked three, kicked straight. He's been one who's had his yips in front of goals. Cameron, Neil, Bailey and Danaher all kicked two. And then they had singles from McCarthy, Rayner, Cockatoo and big Oscar McInerney. So they're sharing the load. They're not relying on Charlie to stand inside 50 one-on-one and kick 4 or 5 or Joe to take speckies. They're getting that, but they're sharing the load. And a slow start, but in the end, they were pretty convincing winners over the Dons.
Yeah, and then Lachie Neale, I mean, 41 touches, 12 clearances, 9 score involvements and 2 goals as well. I mean, he just tore the game apart in that second half, and he loves playing against the Bombers as well, because I looked back and he's averaged 38 touches and kicked 6 goals in his past 4 games against the Bombers, and yet they still don't know how to stop him.
Yeah, they refuse to or decide not to tag him. And Nick Del Santo did the game last night with Del, and he made a really good point about tagging. And a lot of clubs say, oh, we trust our system and we trust our personnel to get the job done. But his point was you don't have the right to say that unless you are, you know, a Melbourne or a Richmond, because your system's not standing up because you're getting beaten. So, you know, Lachie Neale was, it's never one guy single-handedly changing the game, but it's close too, you know. Like, he's, you know, clearances and effective possessions and first possession off the hands of the ruckman. So, I mean, last week it was Dangerfield who completely dominated Essendon. Yesterday it was Neale. Sure, the Dons mids are getting, you know, Parrish 35, Merritt 31, but ultimately it's not enough. So one of those guys needs to go and sacrifice, you know, 10 or 15 disposals of their own to go and quell someone else, because we saw Callum Mills do it on Friday night, completely shut Dangerfield out of the game, and it has a massive impact in the outcome of the game.
Yeah, the behind the goals vision of that, I was watching the round so far on afl.com.au this morning. They've got behind the goals vision as well of Callum Mills and how well he played. Danger, one eye on the ball, one eye on Danger. It was just a masterclass, really.
It was.
What he did, it was brilliant. And then you got Christian Petrarca as well. We spoke about that, you know, last week. Should they tag or not? And then, you know, Petrarca has a day out against the Suns as well.
Yeah, he was phenomenal last night. His ability, it's gone from a guy who probably couldn't get around the ground as well as he would have liked, to a guy who just goes from contest to contest. He's got great burst. He's just got that belief in his body that no one can tackle me.
Yeah.
No one can tackle me. I'm going to fight through every tackle. There was one last night close to goal that resulted in a goal assist. And you could certainly mount the case that it was holding the ball because the tackle went for 3 or 4 seconds, but no one could actually get control of him. He was fending guys off and he was shrugging them and they had their hands on him, but he was in control the whole time and he eventually found a teammate who kicked a goal. He's just in rare air, Christian Petrarca, at the moment.
Oh, he's definitely got 6 Brownlow votes, I reckon, to his name. Patrick Cripps probably has 6 Brownlow votes as well. So, I mean, honestly, it's between the two of them. You could toss a coin there. I really like the game of Tuke Miller as well last night. I mean, I just think he's one that if Gold Coast win enough games, he's my pick for the Brownlow.
He was brilliant last night. 17 disposals in the first quarter. He was absolutely everywhere. They're in great hands, the Suns, with Miller and Rowell and Noah Anderson. Yeah. The way that those three go about their business, now, I don't know them behind the scenes, but you're not that effective on the field unless you do the right things from Monday to Friday. And, you know, Rowell, his ability to be brave and courageous and set the tone in that regard. And he got it in the face of Max Gawn at one stage last night. And they just sort of showed that they're outgunned and Melbourne were pretty much always going to win that game, but they never conceded. And with a little more firepower up front, Ben King, they can miss him all year. Isaac Rankin also was a late withdrawal. With a little bit more firepower, they could have really taken it up to the D's last night. Now, you can argue the D's might have been in third or fourth gear, but Tuke Miller, Rowell, Anderson, they've got the real nucleus there. David Swallow's still there who's setting the standards, and I believe Brandon Ellis has been a really good recruit from a training and expectations and standards point of view, and that's the thing that's been questioned about the Suns for a long time. So they've got a group of guys who are willing workers, and you see the results, or you see them able to stay in games for a bit longer and see them go to Perth last week and win. They wouldn't have been able to do that. No matter what sort of team West Coast put out there, they wouldn't have been able to do that 2, 3, 4 years ago.
No, you're right. Well, we're going to delve into all of these games in a little more detail over the next 2 hours on Sunday Crunch Time. But before we head to our first break, your early impressions, have you got an early call or something that you've seen from the first one and a half rounds of footy, basically, which is, you know, it's a bit early to go with the early call, but I like, you know.
Well, I feel like I'm riding or dying with the Pies because I see enough now. Their opponents, you could argue, aren't going to be the greatest teams this year. St Kilda, who we're not sure where they're at, and the Crows, who have got real concerns. But it's the game style. They're built from the back forward. So their back line, I really, really like their back line. They got Jordan Ruffhead to come in and take those big bruising full forwards. But, you know, Moore is a dasher. Crisp, Maynard, Pendlebury, they've got real dashing types. John Noble back there. Quaynor, they've got a really dashing and rebounding. And Jeremy Howe's inclusion back into that side, I think
we understand.
Yeah, he takes big speckies, but he's intercept marking, he's positioning, he's very vocal, and he's a great kick. And they've got they've got 4 or 5 really creative kicks coming out of the back half, and those guys are just so valuable. My marker for them, I think they're a mid or so short, but my marker for them is if Degoe, Majacek, and Elliott can combine for 100-plus goals, I think they can finish in the top 6.
Top 6?
I really, really like what I've seen from Collingwood thus far, and I've liked them. Even when they were struggling last year, the talent's been there. They've had guys in and out of the side. And, you know, in the end, they have a change of coach. And that can sometimes bring about an immediate, you know, spike. And they're my guys.
Wow. Yeah, I guess that rejuvenation factor with a new coach coming in just has a different look at things, might speak to players in a different way as well and get them thinking about different parts of their game. And, I mean, you can't go past the fact that they still have Jordan Degoe, who isn't yet to really hit his strap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he can get up and running and to the level that we think that he can get to and play consistent footy at that level, then no doubt Collingwood will be a threat. I certainly know lots of Pies fans who are shouting the praises of what they've been able to do so far.
Well, they're 2-0, and that's all you can be. You can only beat who's put in front of you, and they've dispatched of the Saints and the Crows, so can't ask for much more.
No, you can't. All right, well, you're listening to Crunch Time for Red Energy. Moving house, call local energy retailer Red Energy and Regional Development Victoria. On the other side of the break, we're going to break down the game between Hawthorn and Port Adelaide last night at Adelaide Oval.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by the Isuzu D-Max. Born to Live.
You're listening to Crunch Time for Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops. Answer the Camel's Call, Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops. And we'll be taking calls all weekend on the Kogan Open Line. Make the call. Switch to Kogan Mobile for $2.90 for 30 days with a big 20 gig of data. Nat Edwards and Josh Jenkins with you on this Sunday morning. Liam Pickering to join us from 12 o'clock as we count down to the game at Marvel Stadium between North Melbourne and the West Coast Eagles. But right now we're going to recap what happened at Adelaide Oval last night. Port Adelaide 7-14-56 going down to Hawthorn 19-6-120. The Hawks 64-point winners. They are 2-0 to start season 2020 under new coach Sam Mitchell. It was an undermanned Port Adelaide side. They were missing the likes of Alir Alir, Robbie Gray, Charlie Dixon. Trent McKenzie was clearly sore. Tom Cleary also missing. But JJ, this game was just an absolute boil over. I mean, I'm still stunned here Sunday morning that the Hawthorn Football Club actually won this game.
Well, they didn't win. They absolutely blew Port off the park. It was just one of those games for the Hawks where everything went right. The ball use, the skill level, the shots on goal. Was it 13 straight set
13
shots?
13 straight set shots. And it was also, so that scoreline of 19-6-120 is the highest score the Hawks have kicked since round 16, 2018. Wow. Against the Bulldogs.
Wow, unbelievable. And the Port fans may have seen it coming because there was only 30,000 in the house at Adelaide Oval last night, and a few of those would have left. You could have been excused for leaving early into the third quarter because Hawthorn, every time Port even just gave a little tiny yelp, it was the Hawks guns who stood up and said, not tonight. Tonight is our night. And the inclusion, we're speaking about him in the ad break, the inclusion of Jack Gunston back into that side, he just understands how to play the game as a forward. He's not blessed with great size or strength. He's not super quick, but he understands the craft of the game. He understands how to play as a forward. He got himself isolated on numerous occasions last night. And he's not bigger than Trent McKenzie. He's not bigger than the power defenders that he beat, but he's just smarter. He understands the drop zone. He understands how to kick goals. And he just took his chances last night. And one guy who took his chances was Mitch Lewis. And I mean, and you'd know this better than I, that's far and away the best performance we've ever seen from him.
Yeah, certainly. It's a career best, 5 goals from Mitch Lewis. I mean, I remember when he was drafted all the way back in 2016 at pick 76, and Hawthorn thought, this guy could be something. He's, you know, needs a lot of work. This is his 6th season. We've been waiting a long time to see something from Mitch Lewis. There's been glimpses over the last couple of seasons, but so far in 2 games this year, he looks like a proper key forward. He's put on some extra kilos, some extra size. He feels, and he said after the game, he feels much more confident in his own body. Yep. And what he's doing, he's able to crash packs, bring the ball to ground, but also clunk some marks. And he missed a couple last night. He could have taken a couple more. But, I mean, just his presence up there. And now I feel like he's got the confidence to kind of own that space, which he never had before.
And he hasn't lost his, so he's put on some size and he feels stronger, but he hasn't lost the athleticism.
No.
He's still able to jump up at the footy, and particularly when you're playing on defenders who are a little bit smaller, giving away some size. And he's got good size, Lewis. And also defenders that want to stand in front, or they want to, you know, sit off so they can help and spoil. If you've got size and you can jump up at the footy, you get great looks at it. So it's great that he's been able to keep and maintain that athletic prowess that he's got. And he'd take a lot of confidence as well playing with Gunston and Bruce. They're telling him where to go.
Yep.
They're filling him with confidence. You know, he's kicked one or two early. And you're saying to the kid, don't defer to us. You're the hot player. You're on target. We'll do our bit. We'll kick our 2 or 3 each as well. But you go and stand inside 50. You go and isolate yourself. You've got these guys on toast, just filling his cup up with confidence. And you know, hopefully that can be the catalyst for him to really charge forward. And we don't expect him to kick 5 every week. We don't expect him to kick 3 every week. But if he can be a real focal point, if he can have, you know, 2 games a month where he bobs up and kicks 3+, that'll be a great result for the Hawks. And it doesn't take much. You know, all of a sudden you sort of think, oh, you know, how are Hawthorn going to kick goals? How are they going to sort of challenge teams. If Lewis can be a focal point, and then we know what Bruce and Gunston can do, all of a sudden they've got three really quality avenues to go.
And Dylan Moore's the other one at the feet of someone like Mitch Lewis. He kicked two goals last night, but a couple of years ago probably was on the verge of being delisted. He was handed a one-year contract extension at the end of 2020 after playing just the three games. And then last year comes in, plays 20 games of football, kicks 27 goals. And then even this year, it looks like he's continued on with that confidence that he built last year as well. And he's becoming a really important part of that Hawthorn forward line.
Yeah,
too.
Absolutely. It's a good group, and we can get a little bit carried away
based on... It's two games.
Such a, and even the performance last night, they just blew them away, and I think Port was shell-shocked and just couldn't understand what was happening and why it was happening. And you can have those games where you're like, okay, we just need to get ourselves to quarter time or to half time, and we'll just sort of reassess and we'll compose ourselves. And you come out after half time and the Hawks kick two and think, hang on, this is just not happening. Then all of a sudden the game's over, and some of the Port players would have sort of been driving home last night thinking, did that actually really happen? And there was, at no stage could we feel comfortable or, you know, have the ability to retake some control of the game. So you have, you know, on both sides of the spectrum, you have those games, and they are rare where from the Hawks' perspective, absolutely everything goes right. You kick accurately, you know, your ball use is great. You're forced on your left foot and it just happens to hit a target. And you also have those nights where you're a Port Adelaide player and coach, and I'm keen to talk about the Port Adelaide coach in a moment, where absolutely nothing goes right. Everyone has an average or below average game. The crowd's offside and it's just ugly. And sometimes, I don't think they will, but sometimes you need to just completely wipe those games.
We will get on to Port Adelaide in just a moment, but I will be the first to say I had Hawthorn, and I wouldn't be alone, as Wooden Spooners
Wooden
for season
Spooners.
2022. Yeah, I had
a bit
them
of a
winning
reverse psychology, I reckon.
Yeah, maybe a reverse jinx. They were my Wooden Spooners for 2022. We just totally underestimated them, they won seven games last year. It's early days, but the signs certainly don't suggest they are a bottom Wooden Spoon side.
No, definitely not. There's a couple of teams that we've seen already that would definitely probably fit the bill. One that, you know, one or two that might be playing here this afternoon. Ooh, they look really good, and there's a lot of young talent in that team that I don't think a lot of us have paid much or enough attention to. So there's guys in that team who, you know, we're just speaking about Dylan Moore, who was almost off the list and played a really good game of footy last night, 17 disposals, 44 pressure acts. And it doesn't take much for a few role players to actually fulfill those roles that you need. So, you know, we need some wingers who are really good at getting back and helping their defence and then kick-starting the offence. And, you know, we won't know much about them, but they'll fill really important roles and they'll help the team just have that connectivity and that synergy. And all of a sudden, it won't be hard for the defenders to get the ball out and get it into the forward 50. It won't feel like a 400-metre gap between the D50 and the forward 50 because, you get a nice disposal or nice exit from D50, and that's all it takes, one nice kick out of D50, and that's why I'm high on the Pies. Then, you know, your forwards start to feel confident and they're moving and they're not reactive to what's happening. So, yeah, I mean, the Hawks will face sterner challenges, and, you know, Port are supposedly a good side, but we don't know yet. They're going to face some tougher challenges, and as we go, those young players are going to tire and they'll get injuries at different stages. Chad Wingard has a hamstring complaint.
Yes.
What's the seriousness? Or
we're not sure at this stage. I think it was more given his issues with soft tissue injuries in the past that it was more precaution to take him off straight away. His knee he got wrenched in this tackle, and I think something sort of tweaked there. So we didn't see him after halftime. And they've still got Jarman Impey to come back in the side. Will Day's the big one. I think he plays again for Box Hill today. So a couple of runs in the VFL, and he's a really key cog to the Hawks' future moving forward.
Yeah, and Kyle Hardigan will come back in soonish as well. And he's certainly by no means a household name in terms of what he'll bring to the Hawks, but he'll go and take the big you know, key forwards. He'll go and take your Hawkins and your Charlie Dixon and your Nick Larkin and your Josh Kennedy. He'll go and play on those big guys and do a good job more times than not. And he'll allow Frost and those guys and CJ and Day to be able to intercept and play their role. So just another role player that can come in and do exactly that.
Yeah, Sam Frost was brilliant last night. Well, confidence is certainly growing amongst the Hawthorn group. This was the new coach, Sam Mitchell, after the game.
Yeah, I think the belief in our group is slowly growing. You know, we played, you know, a lot of players haven't played in night games before, or you know, a couple of young fellas kicked their first goal, haven't even been to this stadium. So when we go into a game without all those things against a side who, you know, they were a bit banged up, they had some sore boys from their performance last week. But from our perspective, the belief that our players start to get, you know, we know some of the statistical parts of that game are not going to hold up in a sustainable manner. But certainly we know that our best can match up with those types of teams now.
And the energy they'll get too from some of those young guys in Josh Ward and Connor McDonald, who are, you know, best buddies drafted together to the Hawks. Josh Ward, we know, lifetime Hawks supporter. His grandfather played for the Hawks as well. You know, they're just doing some great things in their first two games of AFL footy. Connor McDonald in particular, I absolutely love. On the flip side, though, for Port Adelaide, it was a really disappointing night for the coach, Ken Hinckley. Let's hear what he had to say.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you as far as how far away from what we expected and what we wanted and what we needed. It was so far away, it's you know, it's disappointing. Maximum disappointment is what you can deliver on it. You just can't you can't anticipate that type of performance on a night like tonight. For us, lots of reasons to be playing well, and we didn't certainly deliver it.
They really struggled because they won the clearances. They were plus 24 in the clearances, plus 12 in the inside 50s. You had the likes of Boak and Amon have 39 touches. Mm. Ollie Wines, 36. But they failed going forward. They couldn't, you know, capitalise and convert on their opportunities. And then a lot of junk time possessions from those guys.
Just ineffective disposals. And, you know, I was expecting, you see, Boak 39, Butters 29, Amon 39, Wines 36. You expect to see a lot of handballs.
Yeah.
But it actually wasn't the case. So whether, you know, sideways kicking and, you know, uncontested possession, just possessions that clearly did no damage. And you don't even need to watch the game closely to understand that, because you just need to look at the scoreboard. You need to look at the fact that some of the disposal going inside 50, Port scored on 12% of their inside 50s, a goal on their inside 50s. So 12% of their inside 50s resulted in a goal. That is woeful. Now, there's enough talent there. You don't need, if the ball use is really good, it doesn't really matter who's in there. You know, anyone at AFL level knows how to lead and find space, but some of their ball use going inside 50 was woeful. They got smashed in hitouts. They got actually won the inside 50s, as you said. Mm. So they had plenty of opportunity, but they were just too tame. They had nothing really go their way. Todd Marshall, who is quickly coming to a crossroads at his career, only 4 disposals in the game. I thought Georgiadis showed a fair bit. I really like him.
Yeah, he presented well.
As a player, kicked 3 behind. So he had his chances but was unable to impact the scoreboard in a positive manner. But had 13 disposals and shows a fair bit. Took a few really good marks, took 5 marks. But they do miss Charlie Dixon, but again, they can't rely upon the fact that Charlie's going to come in and dominate, because he's not that type of player. He's a focal point and he creates a contest and he, you know, he kicks his 40 goals a year, but he's not a Coleman medalist type forward who's going to just tear games apart. So yeah, they've got some soul searching and some wound licking to do early in the week, the Power, because they've got a showdown Friday night and it's going to come around quick, and the attention in Adelaide will be scathing, and a lot of it will be directed at the coach, Ken Hinckley. But the reality is, Ken Hinckley wasn't the one converting on 12% of their inside 50s. Yes, they put a plan in place that wasn't executed anywhere near that what they would have liked, but some of their better players need to find a way to be more effective.
I want to talk to you about Ken Hinckley, and I'm going to preface this with saying it is round 2, so it is early, but Ken Hinckley has been at the helm of the Port Adelaide Football Club for 10 season. I think this is his 10th season. Last 2 seasons, they've gone out in the preliminary final. Last year, that was horrible. It was a horror show against the Bulldogs. They've struggled to beat sides above them on the ladder in the last 12 months. I mean, realistically, progress is probably a grand final for them. Are there alarm bells ringing? And is the pressure on Ken Hinckley?
It's in a strange way, it's always been on Ken Hinckley, and lived over there for a long time, and he was the coach for, I think, almost the whole time I was over there. And he's never fully been accepted by the Power fans. And you know, and the thing about Adelaide is you go for a coffee and Crows and Port people will stop you and want to talk about footy. And there's some Port fans at the local cafe I used to go to all the time, and everything was always Ken's fault, and Ken hasn't done this and Ken hasn't done that, and Ken's picked the wrong players, even when they were performing well. So you know, if things go awry for them as we move forward, the pressure is going to be large. And I think it's a great sign or an insight as to how Port are going. Whenever Koshy's shown on the TV 40 times,
oh yeah,
you know things aren't going well. And he's been a great supporter of Ken Hinckley.
Yep.
He has really backed him, but he has also made some big calls and said, you know, finals or bust and grand finals or bust. And they do really, because they've had some free kicks. You know, they played home finals last year with large crowds when teams were travelling. And
yep,
we remember the Bulldogs played a prelim over there and they were locked in their rooms and then they were allowed out and then they weren't. So they've had some free kicks and they haven't been able to capitalise. So, yeah, as I said, it wouldn't be a nice place to be if you're a Port or a Crows player, for that matter, over in Adelaide, because the combined teams are zipping four.
Yeah, no, certainly will be a lot of talk about that. Do you think it is grand final or bust for Port Adelaide this year?
Well, I mean, the goalposts are quickly shifting for them at 0-2 with a showdown, which has proven. Now, they'll go into that showdown red-hot favourites.
Yep.
But showdowns have proven across the course of time that it doesn't really matter who's where on the ladder and who's supposed to win and who's the better team and who's seen as the poorer team. It's all thrown out of sync when it's a showdown. So, you know, if, heaven forbid, they were to lose that showdown to the 0-2 Crows, that would be unpleasant.
Yeah, it certainly would. All right, plenty more to unpack on Sunday Crunch Time. We'll be back right after this.
A sports news update for Rogue. Eat good with Rogue. It's fast, fresh Vietnamese.
I'm Anna Pavlou with your sports update for Rold. The fan that caught the football after Lance Franklin kicked his 1,000th AFL goal has vowed to return it to the Swans. Sydney on Saturday launched a campaign to find the ball Franklin used to kick the goal, but sparked wild scenes against Geelong at the SCG. Matt King came forward posting on his social media saying he would return the ball. The Swans have invited him to training to present the ball back to the 1,000 goal hero on Tuesday. Yet, thousands of fans storming the SCG may not be the most chaotic thing we see at the footy this weekend. There was mass confusion at the MCG yesterday as Collingwood took on Adelaide when the fire alarm went off early in the second quarter. As the sirens blared, patrons were told to exit the stadium while play stopped and teams headed to the middle of the ground. Just 1 minute later, it was announced that it was a false alarm and play resumed.
A sports news update for Rogue. Fast, fresh Vietnamese.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu. Go your own way with the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max and extraordinary 7-seat MUX.
Great to have your company on Sunday Crunch Time. Nat Edwards and Josh Jenkins, who is here for BuyMyStock.SXS Stock. Visit buymystock.com.au. Liam Pickering to join us shortly. We are at Marvel Stadium. The roof is closed here for what I can only imagine is going to be a very, very interesting contest between North Melbourne and the West Coast Eagles. The West Coast Eagles, who have been absolutely savaged with these health and safety protocols, forced to make 13 changes. We will chat about them after midday. But for now, we're going to talk about Collingwood and Adelaide at the MCG yesterday. It was the Pies 15-10-100 defeating the Crows 8-10-58. Collingwood 42 point winners. They've got a perfect record, the perfect start for Craig McRae, and the Crows on the flip side are 0-2 to start 2022. It was that 7-goal third term which really put the Pies on top in this clash, and there was even a little bit of drama with a fire at the MCG yesterday.
The spectators weren't too worried because no one really flocked to the exits, did they? And no one really knew what to do.
I mean, you want to be calm in that situation, but maybe some people were a little too calm. I have heard different anecdotes across the morning of some emergency exits not being quite open to allow people to get through. But luckily, all ended well. The teams were huddled in the middle of the ground, which was bizarre. As we just give you a little bit of insight to what's happening here. This is quite incredible. We're at Marvel Stadium under the roof, and the West Coast Eagles are out on the ground at the moment. And no joke, it's like they're doing a little bit of a meet and greet for the four top-up players who have come into this side for this clash against the Roos. There, an applause, I guess,
looks
going
like,
on
I think
at the
it's
moment.
Nathan Vardy who might be introducing. I reckon that is Big Nath.
Yep.
Introducing. So there's
jumper presentations.
Four top-ups and one debutant, because there's five players standing there. They all look as nervous as anything.
As you
mainly
would
be. Because they don't know anyone that they're
and no one knows who they are. Stephen Giro, Angus Dewar, Braden Ainsworth and Aaron Black are the four top-up players that are here today. And what a bizarre situation to get a call up to play an AFL game and you've got to fly down to Melbourne. You're getting your jumper presented to you on Marvel Stadium about 2 hours before the game actually starts. It's I wonder what's going through their heads right now. You'd be freaking out, wouldn't you?
I'd be intrigued to, as Adam Simpson hands over the first of five new jumpers.
We've got a 22 there. We've got to learn these jumper numbers now.
Oh, incredible. There's a 34. It's unbelievable. And I heard, we spoke to Craig O'Donoghue on Friday on the run home, who's over in Perth, and he sort of said, he spoke about the fact that Adam Simpson hadn't met a few of these players.
Incredible.
And imagine on the plane over here, they only flew yesterday. They normally fly 2 days prior.
Yeah, they had to delay.
They had to put it back because they didn't know who they had available, because a lot of their top-ups have also got COVID.
Oh, my goodness.
So Adam Simpson would have spent the most part on the plane, that four-hour plane ride, actually getting to know some of his players and what sort of things they like to do, what their background is, who they are, where they come from. So, incredible situation. And, we've jumped off topic for a moment.
We have.
That is, you just do not see that.
No, this is an absolutely bizarre thing. I mean, we saw the number 22 handed out. I'm not sure who it was handed out to. We're getting photos right now. But that's actually Isaiah Winder's number. So, they're recycling numbers. They don't even have, 51 or 52 to hand out. They've had to say, you've got COVID. I'm going to take your jumper and hand it to someone else. I hope they get it back.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. There's family all over the place who clearly would be
That's
extremely excited for these guys to make their debut. They're not even thinking about preparing for their waffle season with their local club 10, 12, 15 days ago, and now they're playing an AFL game at 110 at Marvel Stadium in round two. It is quite incredible. And the Eagles are probably, and Freo, are going to have to deal with this for the foreseeable future. So, not sure what's being said or who's even saying it at the moment. I don't think that's Adam Simpson, but...
No. I feel like it's an orientation day here at Marvel Stadium for West Coast. Unbelievable. We will talk more about this game in more detail after midday when Liam Pickering joins us. But let's get back to Collingwood and Adelaide. And you mentioned at the top of the show, and for those who weren't listening, you feel like Collingwood can actually make the top six here. Talk us through all of that in a bit more detail.
I like what they've built from the back forward. And I like their back grouping. So I've got a lot of respect. I love the way Jack Crisp goes about it. I spoke about how important Jeremy Howe is to that group. I think we sort of think a lot about how great a mark he is, but he's a brilliant kick as well. I like what David Noble's son, John Noble, brings to that back half. He's a dasher. Quaynor's that sort of lockdown and dashing type. Pendlebury's gone back there to provide a little bit of stability and added ball use and composure as well. He had 28 disposals. And Darcy Moore, we know how good he is. And Jordan Ruffhead will come back into the team as well, and he'll take those big bruising full forwards. So I just really like what they've built from their back half. Grundy will need to get back to the All-Australian level of sort of 2018 when he was one of the best, if not the best, ruck in the game. So I really, really like what they've done. They've found one in Lipinski. They've given him an opportunity. He's rewarded them 24 disposals again yesterday. Yeah. Nathan Kruger gets an opportunity. Injures his shoulder. A guy I know really well from down there at Geelong kicks a couple. So just feel like they're starting to figure it out a little bit with their personnel. They've got a game style that they that certainly looks exciting and
so
certainly resembles
watch.
A little bit of Richmond of 2018 and 2019. But I really think that they've built something that's sustainable in the terms of the way they play. They've got some personnel that have always had the talent. But also, we're not sure about a few. We're talking about Port, whether they're going to, you know, fall or what's going to happen there. So there's an opportunity for a team or two to jump up the ladder, and maybe the Pies are it.
And those young kids too coming through. Ollie Henry, I really liked, you know, watching him in his under 18 year. But two goals yesterday. Bo McCreary is the other one. Two goals there. Jack Ginnivan, I mean, and then you've got Nick Dacos, of course, and Josh. Loving what that group of youngsters, that young brigade that is coming through the ranks, they're actually producing out there, and they're going to rejuvenate those older, more experienced guys like a Scott Pendlebury. And what a luxury to have him play at half back, isn't it? 28 disposals and 6 rebound 50s. I really like that move to put him there.
Indeed. I'm glad Ginnivan played well off the back of some heat from our man Kane Corns. He responded nicely with 21 disposals. He was really good. He had 3 score assists as well. And you spoke about the Dacos brothers just racking up the footy, 25-plus, both of those two. So you're right, there's some young talent there, and their forward line's a little bit of a query. Darcy Cameron started as a sub yesterday.
Yeah, that was bizarre, wasn't it?
Really interesting. So I heard Craig McRae explain that in the post-match, where they sort of thought, well, we had a game in the preseason where Kruger actually ironically went down as he did yesterday, and they were sort of a little bit short-handed, literally. So they thought, we'll play Cameron as a sub. I think they need to sort out what they're doing there with Cameron and Cox.
Yeah.
Mason Cox missed with an ankle. Believe he'll be right for this week. They need to work out what's going on there. But I think they can afford to just pick whichever guy's in better form. And now, neither of them are going to really, you know, jump up and kick, you know, 35, 40 goals. But whichever's in form, play that guy. And hopefully Degoe, Mychek's a willing worker, and they get some goals from Elliott as well.
So while we talk about the Pies and the exciting game style that we're seeing under Craig McRae, on the flip side, though, with the Adelaide Crows, I mean, that short chip mark game we heard Brenton Sanderson say on the broadcast yesterday was very critical of that game style, and even Jared said that it was counterintuitive and laborious and sort of out of touch of the way that the game is being played in 2022. Does Matty Nix, I guess, stay the course with the style and the game plan that he obviously wants to implement, or does he need to actually change things now? Saying that, it's round two.
Yeah, no, you have to stick with it because they showed signs last year of some talent, and they are a talented they've got talent in there, but they've also got a very one-paced and same midfield. You know, like Keys has had 37 disposals, but he's definitely not a great ball user. He's a great worker, and he's setting the tone for them at the moment, but he's not necessarily a guy you want kicking the ball 21 times. Roy Sloan's struggling and finished the game subbed out with a sore groin. Matt Crouch is a handballer and not necessarily a meters gain guy. Roy Led's not in the team, but he's the same. He's an accumulator, not a meters gain guy. They rely heavily upon Dawson, the new recruit, and Brody Smith, who both played incredibly well yesterday. Dawson had 28 disposals, kicked a goal. Brody Smith had 30 and kicked a goal. And they were still lifeless in terms of what they did with the ball in hand. They got nothing from their young forwards. Fogarty looks all at sea at the moment. He just can't find the footy. And normally, when he is able to find the footy, he's a good shot at goal. He missed a couple of opportunities yesterday. So he's basically
10
reliant,
touches, no goals.
He's reliant on 2 or 3 shots on goal, and it's just not happening for him. And the same with Himmelberg.
All right, plenty more still to come on Sunday Crunch Time. Stick with us.
Welcome to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu. Go your own way with the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max and extraordinary 7-seat MUX.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday Crunch Time. It's great to have your company. Welcome to you if you are joining us for the first time on this Sunday. We've already had a jam-packed hour of Crunch Time. Nat Edwards and Josh Jenkins with you, as well as Liam Pickering, who's decided to make his way into the radio box here at Marvel Stadium. Welcome to you, Pickers.
Hello, Nat, and hello to you, JJ, and all our listening audience. It's good to be here. Have a look at these sexy scoreboards. They're not doing a lot for me, I must say. I mean, it's just, it looks like a scoreboard. But anyway, it's going to be an interesting game today with North Melbourne up against, you know, a waffle team, really, with the amount of players at the West Coast.
This is the most bizarre thing we were saying. If you're just tuning in, they've had pretty much an orientation day out here on Marvel Stadium for the West Coast Eagles. There was a jumper presentation for those four top-up players who are just getting recycled jumper numbers, if you don't mind. It's a bizarre situation where they haven't met each other before. So, it's going to be very curious to see what unfolds here today.
Well, you'd think that they'd come out and in the first half at least, and you'd think they'd be really competitive. I think they will be because, I mean, what have they got to lose? I mean, no one's expecting them to win the game. So I think they'll be competitive early, which they were against the Gold Coast, and then obviously fell away late so in the first round. So it'll be pretty similar today.
All right. Well, as we preview the North Melbourne West Coast clash, we're counting down about an hour and 9 minutes to go until that game kicks off. We've now got Anthony Rocker, North Melbourne development coach, on the line to speak to us. Welcome to Crunch Time.
Thanks, Nat. How are you?
I'm going well. How are you? And how do you prepare for a game like this? Because as we were just saying, it's such a bizarre situation with these top-up players and, you know, West Coast making 13 forced changes. It's a hard one to plan for from your perspective, I'd imagine.
Oh, look, it's we did a lot of planning, and I do a little bit of midfield work with Geordie Russell, and we did a lot of planning around Nick Nat, and that goes out the door yesterday. But look, you know, coming off last week against Hawthorn, we had opportunities to win that game, and there was some, you know, some things out of that game that we really wanted to work on. So, you know, I know they've got players in that we really don't know, but today's all about us, particularly in regards to the way that we want to play and for today and for going forward throughout the future.
So talk us through, I mean, that disappointment against Hawthorn last week, but what is the way that you would like to play and what is it that you want to see from the players out there today?
Yeah, in that second quarter, we were 21 points up and playing some really good footy. And then the Hawks, you know, put the arm wrestle onto us and we just didn't keep up with that arm wrestle. And there was a couple of turnovers and the way we moved the ball and the way that we want to defend through that patch that, you know, we've gone to work on throughout the week. And the players are aware of that, and it's an area for us to improve on today.
Anthony, Jared Pollock gets an opportunity back in the side. There's been a lot spoken about, you know, his situation and where he's at and where he's been. What sort of a role will you expect from him? What sort of things will you want to see from him for him to actually play and perform his role to your expectation?
Yeah, Jared's buy-in this year throughout pre-season has been fantastic. He's really put in a solid pre-season. It was unfortunate for him to get injured late a couple of weeks ago, which forced him out of the side. But this week he comes in to play the wing role. He's probably our best winger in regards to his cleverness, his smarts, and his ability to get back and forward and impact the scoreboard as well. So we're really looking for his leadership out there and the ability to help defensively and offensively.
Pebbles, the rucking situation is really interesting. Last week it was Coleman Jones that seemed to get first nod in the centre bounce and a bit of Goldstein, and then Goldie went forward and looked pretty dangerous, etc. Coleman Jones out of the team today. I mean, do we expect to see Goldie a bit more forward, or is he going to play a bit more on the ball today?
Well, Big X started in the ruck last week, so he had a huge impact against Reeves, and then Goldie got in there, and CJ was predominantly forward for the most of the day. And when you look, we went into that game trying to play three talls, and if we would have connected with our ball movement a bit more and found him, we wouldn't be talking about the three talls, would we? But look, it didn't work, and we've gone a little bit smaller this week, and hopefully those rucks will impact and help our mids today in getting that ball forward.
Yeah, and what about in defence? You lost Ben McKay early in the game, and you looked very, very short in defence last week. What have you done this week? You brought Josh Walker back, I see.
Yeah, Walks is back from his COVID rest. It's unfortunately that Benny McKay's gone out. He's been great throughout the whole week. You wouldn't even tell that he got concussion, but unfortunately he's got to miss the due time. But Walks comes back, which will shore up, and I'm sure he'll probably get the job on Darling and trying to curtail his influence.
Can you take us into, you know, within reason, the conversation with Coleman Jones? Because I'm sure there was, not a promise, but there was a discussion about, you know, you haven't been able to get opportunities at Richmond. There'll be far more opportunities here with us. Plays in round one, things don't go his way, but wasn't entirely his fault. As you said, the connection and the team didn't play that well, and then he finds himself out of the side in round two. Was there a sort of a longish conversation that needed to go on there?
Yeah, there was, and there's no doubt about our ball movement. That didn't help him getting the ball forward. In saying that, his pre-season has been interrupted. He got COVID once, and then a couple of weeks after that was interrupted again with another illness, and then hurt his ankle a few weeks out leading into round one. And then, you know, throughout pre-season, if you get those little setbacks, it just sets you back and you don't have that continuity to get into round one. But we thought that aerial presence of him down forward would help us, and unfortunately, you know, it just didn't turn out that way last week.
Jaden Stevenson's gone out of the side. What is the message to him moving forward, and what does he need to do?
Go back, accumulate possession, do all the little things, chase, pressure, tackle, that make him back into the form of his 218, 219 form. So he's got that. He knows exactly what he needs to do. It's unfortunate that he can't be out here, but we've got to create an environment where every player's got to, you know, pull their weight to play through this team.
David King was sort of saying that he felt that Jaden was miles off the standard that is acceptable. Is that a fair assessment, do you think?
You commentators can assess that. Look, we as coaches, we work on the positive attributes that he can bring, and when he does that, he's such a damaging player who can change games.
I wanted to ask you about Will Phillips because, you know, I followed him closely in his draft year, obviously the pick three in the 2020 draft. I absolutely love what he has to bring, but obviously has the glandular fever at the moment. How is he tracking?
He's tracking well. He's back at the club full time as we speak. Okay. It's quite unfortunate that he got that glandular fever because, you know, 3 weeks, he had three really good weeks of form where he was dominating through his clean touch inside as playing as a mid in our match sims. And it was really unfortunate that he got that illness. So we're really pumped and positive to what Will can bring to this team when he's back into full fitness.
So no time frame, I guess, on when he can come back. It's sort of a suck it and see situation.
Yeah, not as yet as I know. I'm just tipping he just needs to get a quality of work in for the next probably 3 to 4 weeks of work. So there's no time frame that I know of this stage.
No worries. Well, Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Crunch Time. Best of luck for the game this afternoon.
Thanks, guys.
Anthony Rocker there, North Melbourne's development coach, as they prepare for a game against the West Coast Eagles, the West Coast Eagles waffle side, pretty much.
It is, yeah. They're playing Subiaco today. It'll be a really good game. It was an interesting question you asked, Nat. You do ask the hard questions about Stevenson because King is right on the money. I totally agree with David King. I mean, I think his effort levels last week were really ordinary.
Yeah.
Again, in that game that we called against Hawthorn, I think that's an area that he needs to get much more consistent in. It seems to be, he picks and chooses a little bit, Jaden Stevenson, when he actually really wants to commit.
Yeah,
it's really obvious when that's the case.
Yeah, and you just can't afford to do that. And the players that do that end up having either short careers or interrupted careers.
Well, they're in and out of the team the whole time, and that's what he'll be until he gets that consistency
and
performance.
Right. And I guess they need to work out what he is as well. I mean, you can be versatile and play half forward and wing and deep forward, but I think that's the issue. I don't know what he is, and he's not.
I think he's a forward.
I think when he played his best footy for Collingwood, he almost played as a lead out of the goal square type.
Yeah.
As a junior, he was a wingman and a really nice player. He's a really talented player.
Yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't even be wasting our breath on him if we didn't think he was up to the level. He is. He's clearly up to the level. I mean, we've seen it when he was at the Pies and we know he's got it. And he was pretty good in some games last year for North. But what he needs to do is find a spot and really work. I mean, we're seeing a bloke back today for the first time. I reckon we've seen him at AFL level in over a year, Pollock. Jared Pollock, who was exactly the same. Like, he just went missing. And his effort levels, you know, wavered and all that sort of stuff from game to game and in games. And he found himself not getting a look in last year. So he's gone and done the work. Now, can he hold his spot from now? Let's just wait and see. But Stevenson's a talented enough player. They went and got him. They went and did a bit to get him.
Rising star. I mean, that year he was talented. Brilliant. So talented.
Yeah, so I think forward that pushes up onto the wing, that's sort of half-forward wing role for me.
And to play that role successfully, you've got to have enormous work rate. You've got to be able to get up, help defend, you know, get the outlet kick at sort of 70, 80 metres from your own goal and then work all the way back. We see the good players who play those roles. Brad Close the other night just works.
How well did he play?
GPS just blows up. You know, Tommy Lynch, a guy who I played with who's at North, who hopefully he's teaching Jade and those sorts of things. Those roles, you don't get easy possession. You've got to run your tail off. And he can run.
He can run. There's
you
no
just
doubt
got to be willing
that.
To do it.
Well, the first hour of Sunday Crunch Time, JJ and I were discussing what we liked from the weekend so far, and we will talk about Buddy Franklin a little bit later again. But Pickers, now that you've joined us, what have you seen over this weekend that you really liked?
Well, I love the way Hawthorn played. I mean, I thought
that
was
glad
just,
you brought that yeah, up
I knew
again.
You'd like
We've
that,
already
Nat.
Talked about the Hawks for 20 minutes, but we can go.
Well, no,
we
I thought that, look, that was the performance so far of the year. I just didn't see coming. Yeah, to be honest, that was a pretty lackluster game last week. They did well to win that game against North Melbourne, but it was the poorest game of the round. And they got the points last week. Well done. But to go over in Adelaide and absolutely towel up Port Adelaide like they did, I mean, that's the performance of the weekend. The Swans, well, they're a serious team. They're a serious team, the Sydney Swans. They're a premiership potential team, which I don't think anyone really thought. Everyone pretty much had them in the eight because we just see the development of the way they're going. But Johnny Longmire's got them playing unbelievably good football. And when you've got a forward line with Heaney and Franklin in it and a tough inside midfield group, I mean, the job that Callum Mills did on the weekend
was brilliant, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. I mean, seriously, they are a really good football team. And the Blues, of course, Thursday night, that was a great game. It was a really good game because the Dogs were a quality team and they came back hard at them. Yeah, they had their chances in the back end of the game when they kicked a few points, whatever, but Carlton deserved that win.
Oh, very much so. Listening to Talkback Radio on SEN on Friday morning, just Blues fans ringing out. The lid is completely off. How far do you think they can go, seriously? I know it's only two rounds of footy, but from what I've seen, I'm excited.
Oh, so am I. Look, I've got them. I think they'll make the eight now. I'll just have a look at their draw. I reckon they can be 7-1 after eight games.
Oi, hello.
Well, have a look at their draw. Seriously. Get their draw up, Nat, and tell me if I'm actually being ahead of myself. The only game I thought was dangerous was Port Adelaide after last night's performance. They might be 8-0.
Well, what about they got Carlton Hawthorn next week? Hawthorn and O'Walker.
Oh, yeah.
I think they'll beat the Hawks because they've got the tools that can beat Hawthorn.
I agree with you. I think if they weren't wearing the Carlton strip, and that's the hesitancy we've got, Carlton. We've been worried you've done nothing for 20 years. If they were wearing just a plain white Guernsey and we're judging them on how they're playing, we think this team is, they've got top four potential because...
Where's the area of the ground, JJ, at the moment that they look like they're lacking?
If they lose...
I can't see it. Outside of Wiedering's,
yes,
their key defender, right?
If they lost Wiedering,
if they lose in, then it's a whole different game. But... But they need someone to help Wiedering.
Yeah, well,
can't be just him.
Marchbank is a guy they've got great raps on.
He never plays.
He's not genuine key back size. I don't mind Lewis Young.
Plowman, I know they've got some faith in.
Yeah, they do. Blues fans don't.
No, you ask the players and the coaches,
yeah,
they do.
I agree. And I think he's a system defender. He gets found out when he plays. The thing is, the reason he gets found out is because they throw him to... He has to play in Dusty.
Yeah.
He has to play in Danger when he plays for. He has to play in Heaney. Of course you're going to get found out in those situations.
But see, I don't think it's they're being exposed key backs. I think that they will be. If they ever lost Wiedering, they're in real trouble. Yeah. But I think they're getting exposed at ground level in defence. Like, what the hell was going on in the last 10 minutes with Saad, Newman? What was going on there? Do they not know how to ice a game? Like, I mean, they're trying to ping passes from 30 metres in the corridor.
It's probably very foreign to them.
Well, it is, but that's the mindset of...
They need to switch that.
If they want to be a top eight team, a real contender, they're not the decisions you make late in games. You just don't open the door for good teams. And Bulldogs are a good team.
But back to your call that the Carlton Football Club could be 7-1, which is outrageous. Okay, so Hawthorn next week at the MCG. Gold Coast at Metricon.
I'll beat Gold Coast.
Port Adelaide at the MCG. I'd be worried for the Power. Fremantle at Optus Stadium.
Then flip of the coin,
North Melbourne in round 7. And round 8, Adelaide.
They'll beat all them.
you actually could be on the money here, and I hate saying that.
Well, because I said it. I just love the way that their midfield group. I mean, when you got Patrick Cripps playing like he is. He's got six brown overs. Don't worry about that.
Easy.
And that is Patrick Cripps from 3 years ago. And yeah. I was a little bit critical of him last year, and the fact that he was probably carrying something, but he hadn't been playing that sort of footy. But from the game they played against Melbourne in the Community Series, he has looked the Patrick Cripps that was the MVP 4 years ago, whenever it was. Yeah. So now they're genuine, in my view. And then you'll throw Chera back in next week.
Yeah.
Walsh comes back.
Jack Martin too. I mean, still want to see what he can do.
Oh, he'll be the X factor when they've got Curnow. If he continues on his
Charlie Curnow.
Yeah, if he continues that way and you've got Harry doing what Harry does. Yeah. The one area that Bulldogs are really vulnerable, tools,
always
forwards,
have been.
And they got exposed badly by Curnow and Mackay.
Will Martin ever be more than an X factor? Do you think he's got the talent, but will he have the consistency to be a, 15, four or five tackles, one and a half, two goals every week? Will he be able to have that level of consistency?
It's up to him. Mm. He's got all the talent to do that. He's a really, really talented player. I remember when he went to the Gold Coast, when he first turned up at the Gold Coast, Gary Albert told me he was the best junior he'd ever seen. Mm. After a year earlier, he was telling me Jago Ramirez is the best junior he'd ever seen. So
probably.
Gary does float a little bit, but he did say to me, mate, wait until you see this bloke play. And that's Gary Ablett. Mm. Mm. I mean, so look, he can be such a weapon with that forward line set up. If he plays, roams across half forward, and he can kick 35 goals this year. And if he does, they're going to be a serious team.
Now, last night over at Metricon Stadium, it was the Gold Coast Suns who went down 10-9-69 to the D's 12-10-82. The Suns, though, they actually showed something. I thought they were very impressive early on in particular. They had 60 inside 50s, though, for 10 goals. I know they're missing Isaac Rankin.
They just needed Ben
King.
And
obviously
there.
Ben King.
That's who they needed.
But they've got to find a way this season.
Yeah, well, they will find a way to beat mediocre teams. They won't beat teams like Melbourne. Again, not Melbourne can have an off night. And they weren't great, Melbourne, to be honest. But that was probably the pressure that the Suns were putting on. But overall, I thought it was a good competitive game. But Melbourne always seemed to have the answers.
Luke Jackson. JJ, you called that game. How good? Oh. I mean, we already know how good he is. Where is the ceiling for this guy? 21 disposals, 2 goals, 17 hitouts, 7 clearance. I mean, he was everywhere last night. He was spoiling in defence. He was kicking goals from stoppages. I absolutely love watching Luke Jackson play. But where is the ceiling for this guy? Because the trajectory...
Unbelievable. He was in a game which was really competitive. It was a game where you thought, things could sort of... the D's will just sort of scrap away, and it was pretty slippery and humid, and the ball was hard to handle at different stages. He's a bull. He knows he's good. He's physical. He's a supreme athlete. He can just jump up. He wants to tackle people. A lot of times you ask rucks to, compete hard in the air, but just give us some follow-up, get involved. He doesn't get involved. He starts it.
Yeah.
There were times last night he'd jump up all over Jared Witts, who's a really good centre-bounce ruckman, up over the top of him. He'd get the first handball receive. He'd get the second one. He'd lay a tackle. He'd kick it inside 50. He was just incredible. And I mean, he's doing this whilst playing. He's probably getting 35 or 40% time in the ruck because Max Gawn is the number one ruck in the game. They have the luxury of all luxuries with those two. And he actually is improving as a forward as well. His craft and his aerial capability as a forward. Now, Christian Petrarca said it after the game. They've just got to get him signed up.
Yeah.
sooner than later because...
Well, if West Coast don't have a massive go at him, I'll be surprised.
They'd have to WA be. WA boy.
Both, I mean, Nick Nat's not getting any younger.
No.
Well, Fremantle have got Darcy at least.
Sean Darcy.
You just find a way to get him in your side as well.
They'll both be interested in him. Don't get me wrong. David Walls won't be sitting there twiddling his thumbs. Yeah, sitting there going, I think I won't bother because we've got old mate. They'll be going
we've
as well.
Got but, old mate.
But West Coast are the ones. I mean, they're the ones that have got to go out and get him because that's an area that they're always desperate to get an extra ruckman. So.
I don't think he's leaving.
Well,
he's worth anything. But how much can Melbourne afford to pay him? Because, premiership winning lists are often at the upper end of the salary cap. How much can they afford to pay him with the superstars that they've got? Petrarca and Oliver and those guys have signed big deals.
They'll all be on top dollar, but most of the good teams have been able to keep him, haven't they?
Yeah.
If you go over the years.
You
like
take
Richmond
a little bit
theirs.
Of a sacrifice, wouldn't you? As a team, I mean, you hear about the Hawks of that era, you know, sacrificing
they didn't have a choice.
Salary
the same,
so they can
yeah.
stick together.
Yeah. So, yeah, they do. And I'm sure Richmond players are getting under what they actually really worth back when they were winning all those flags. But
he might win a couple of flags and then...
He's only a kid, that's the thing.
He might win two flags and then say, well, now I've done my job for Melbourne. I've won two flags for the D's.
How long did Juddy last at West Coast? 6 years?
Yeah, it was about 6 years, yeah. Yeah,
I think so.
And then he came home?
Won the premiership.
Oh, I think there'll always be a pull to go back.
Yeah, I mean, if your family's there and you're close to them, then that makes sense. But I guess it depends on the culture that Melbourne have built and the environment that they create and people wanting to stick together for a group. Now, we're just getting word through here as we count down to the North Melbourne West Coast game at Marvel Stadium. The roof is closed. There is a late change for North Melbourne. Kyron Hayden, who actually came into this game this week, he was an inclusion, is now out with illness, replaced by Tom Powell, who was dropped earlier in the week. The medical subs, Aidan Bonner for North Melbourne and Luke Edwards for the West Coast Eagles.
Well, they're the subs. Aidan Bonner and Luke Edwards,
yep,
is that right?
They're okay. The subs.
Tom Powell.
It's interesting. Aidan Bonner, the one thing that they were vulnerable last week was key defence. Yeah.
And
they got
a
tall bloke starting as a sub.
Yeah, played centre-half forward in the VFL last weekend.
Okay. Tom Powell, Aiden, speaking to a
Bonner.
Few.
Didn't he play in the AFL? I'm sure I called him last week.
I wasn't there.
So. No, I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure he played the AFL.
I didn't spend too
maybe
much
it was
time reflecting
it was
before, on that game. Tom Powell was speaking to a North Melbourne tragic friend of mine. Was one that he was filthy, was out of the side. So,
well, everyone likes Tom
back
Powell
in.
At North. But the problem is he hasn't been going as well as he was last year. So a little bit of a wake-up call. Anyway, he's back, so he'll probably play well today. So,
well, I want to take you through the teams, and let's take you through the Eagles' outs.
Give us the outs, please.
Tom Barras, Josh Kennedy, Jack Redden, Isaiah Winder, Zach Langdon, Jake Waterman, Josh Rotham, you've got Hugh Dixon, Nick Natanui, Howe, Jermaine Jones, Edwards, and Andrew Gaff with injury. So the rest are with COVID health and safety protocols.
Minor outs, yeah.
Just minor outs. And then the ins, though.
The ins. Let's get these household
Liam
names in.
Ryan.
Yeah, big tick.
Jack Darling back
tick.
For his first game of 2020 since being vaccinated. Alex Witherden, Luke Shuey, that's the big one, back from a
ticks.
Hammy. Liam Duggan. Then
tick.
You've got Jamison Williams, Aaron Black, Angus Dewar, Stefan Giro, and Braden Ainsworth.
When I heard that West Coast had signed Aaron Black, I thought, hang on a minute, isn't he the VFL manager of the Cats and I just
plays
doing a deal
waffle
with him? Different Aaron Black. So not the one that played for the Cats and the Kangas.
No.
This is Aaron Black, who's been running around, won a Sandover medal.
Yes, in the waffle.
And he's a strong inside mid,
excellent,
I believe.
Excellent player.
And yeah, so he gets his opportunity at 30. It's the real replacements, isn't it, today? And I can't wait to see what they do.
I agree.
Honest.
I mean,
I hope
who knows?
We find one or two out of this.
Well, because you've got the mid-season draft still, so who knows? This could be the perfect audition.
That's exactly what it is. And you look at Nick Martin last week for Essendon.
Oh.
Wasn't even on a list. Comes out and has 27 and kicks five against the Cats, and then gets COVID, unfortunately. But there is an opportunity here for someone today to do. I heard Dermot say it yesterday. It was such a great summary. Their Rocky Balboa moment. They're up against Apollo Creed today, and what have they got to lose? What have they got to lose?
Well,
nothing.
They've got absolutely nothing to lose, and it is a little bit of a danger game then for North Melbourne because everyone
it's a danger
expects
game.
The other
them
got plenty to lose.
That's the thing, isn't it? Everyone expects North Melbourne to win, and the pressure is right on them.
Oh, this if they lose, if North lose, it's the number one. Forget about Port will be saying thank you very much. We don't have to be talked about.
Not
over in Adelaide anyway. North, particularly coming off a poor performance last week where they just didn't. You can lose games of footy, that's fine. We understand they're developing, but they just didn't show a real game style or anything positive or anything last week under the beautiful sunshine at the MCG. It was a really dour game. So, I mean, they just. Look, today is a day where just win. Look, at the. Yeah, in 3 or 4 days' time, just win the game. We'll talk about if it wasn't pretty.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be
pretty. We'll talk about it. Just please win the game.
Well, they need to win like Melbourne won last night.
Yeah.
Just scrap out a 12-point win against a team that's got half a blokes that play in the waffle, basically. Just do that. Get 4 points on the board. Let your supporters go home and get on their WhatsApp groups and get on their Facebook pages and say, well, it wasn't a great game, but we won, didn't we?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you want. West Coast, on the other hand, I reckon they've got a free throw at the stumps here. I really do. I reckon they just go out and go, well, let's just play.
I'm really curious to see how Jack Darling goes, because obviously he trained away from the club, wasn't allowed to be there until he caught up with his vaccination status, but then had that, he came back to training and had that foot injury and missed last week, and now he's back in. I'm just, he's going to be underdone, isn't he?
Well, you reckon they'll boo him today?
Nah. Surely not.
Don't reckon?
Won't be enough North fans here to boo him.
Yeah, well, that was going to be a light.
Why would you boo a bloke because he wanted to make a choice to not get vaxxed? I mean, big deal.
Oh, I'm just...
He's been vaxxed now. Who cares?
Yeah.
Why would anyone boo question.
Him? I know.
Good
question.
Why would you boo him, though? Look, I mean, we haven't reduced ourselves to those that donkey level, have we? We're booing a person for... Not
midway through the second, just remember.
All right, you're listening to Sunday Crunch Time. This is a pregame show for Thirsty Camel. Answer the camel's call. Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by the Isuzu D-Max. Born to live.
Hope you're having a fantastic weekend. We're about 40 minutes away from the first bounce here at Marvel Stadium. North Melbourne up against West Coast. And just repeating the news if you're joining us for the first time today, there is a late change with the Kangaroos. Kyron Hayden out with illness, replaced by Tom Powell. The medical subs today for the Roos, Aidan Bonner, and for West Coast, it is Luke Edwards. Plenty of great storylines going around in round two. Josh Jenkins and Liam Pickering with me, but we have to talk about what happened on Friday night at the SCG. Buddy Franklin's 1,000th goal. The race was on. You could see fans with one leg over the boundary line as he took his kick. The security guards never had a chance, Pickers.
Comical.
They didn't really try that hard, did they?
No, they didn't. They probably should have surrounded, like, been on the ground kind of behind him from the start.
Yeah, well, it was half farcical, really, when you think about it. I mean, the way they allowed them to hang around as long as they did, grown men with phones, I mean, give me a spell. I think it was pathetic. But it was great to see everyone run on, but get on, have your little 5 seconds. People spraying, you know, spreading ashes onto the ground.
I saw that.
You got someone setting up a picnic rug. I mean, grow up, for God's sake. The world's gone mad.
You're a bit of a party pooper, aren't you?
Well, not a party pooper, but the last quarter went for an hour and that.
Yeah, it did. Well, with 35-minute delay.
Thank God the game was over.
Well, they should have just abandoned the game, to be honest.
I thought they were going to. I didn't think that.
It wasn't actually fair for both teams to have to go back out
there. No, not really.
Buddy comes off the ground. The first thing he says, all I can taste is Carlton draft.
Yes.
Someone's throwing a beer in his face. I mean, anyway, it was great. It was fantastic. The greatest showman put on a performance, as he would. It meant so much for him the other night. You could just see that with... Had all his family there. Yeah. He had all his mates there. It was sensational to see. It really was. And what a superstar he has been as a player, and he continues to be. And what a showcase game it was. I mean, it was fantastic. Sydney, they turned up as the game that grew and grew and grew as he got closer to his 1,000th goal. So, it was fantastic.
Nah, it was a beautiful moment. And, you know, what about the guy that caught the actual ball?
Yes.
He marked the ball in the crowd. Now, the Sydney Swans have found him, and he is going to go to training to present the ball back to Buddy Franklin. I want to know, though, what are you going to give up for it? Because Tom Brady, in his last game, he gave a Bitcoin to the guy who gave the ball back.
Which was worth 75 grand. It's now worth 50 grand.
That's unfortunate. Hey, it's a free Bitcoin.
Hey, it could be worse. It could be the bloke that played 518,000 for Tom Brady's last touchdown ball and he comes out of retirement a month later.
Yeah. You get a refund.
I don't buy this for a second. Nick Del Santo last night tried to tell me that footy was valued at $200,000.
$200,000.
There's no way it's worth $200,000.
How do they value that? How would he come up with that figure? So he's heard it from somebody.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Unless he knows
there's no way it's worth that. I mean, that's what I'm running with. If I'm the man who's got the footy, I want give us 50.
So this is what I would be saying. I'll give you the ball back if you give me the boot that you kicked it with.
Yeah.
Just as a fair trade, isn't it?
Let me give you a little heads up. Buddy changes his boots every game.
Yeah.
Every game.
So he
gets a new pair of boots
you.
Every match. So give him that pair and you pull the other pair out.
Or he could keep one and sell that as, you know, memorabilia or keep it boxed up and then just give one away. Well, I mean...
I don't know. You guys collectors?
Yes.
Are you a collector, are you?
I love sports memorabilia.
What's the best thing you've ever been given or you've ever bought?
Oh, it is a Cyril Rioli jumper Cyril. From the 2015
of anything
season.
In the whole world,
and
that's what you
picked. It's framed, and
really?
Yes, that is my pride and joy, my Cyril Rioli. It was a jumper he actually wore during the 2015 season.
Okay,
when he
what
won
about
the
you, JJ?
I've got a signed, framed Tom Brady jersey. I met Tom Brady in about 2013. So I've got a framed Brady jersey with a photo of he and I.
Oh,
yeah,
that's nice. Have you got anything?
No, well, I have. I've got stuff, but I'm not a collector at all. I got given the 1994 preliminary final ball signed by the umpires, given to me as a 30th birthday present by Alistair Clarkson.
Oh.
I don't know where it is. It's in a box somewhere.
Oh, mate, bring
yeah.
it in.
Well, we went to, it's a game that we won after the siren. Ablett kicked that famous goal after the siren. But, yeah, I don't know where Clarko got it from and how we got the umpires to sign. I've got no idea. But again, it's not. I don't collect things. But, I mean, I know collectors out there are people that, you know, we're a bit dorky, let's be honest, if you're collecting stuff. So where do you have yours hanging then?
Just in the living room.
Oh, you've got it hanging up on the wall.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
JJ's
you hang
got
things.
That. You go into JJ's places, there's a big photo frame, photo of JJ taking a mark. You go down the hallway and there he is kicking a goal and there he is handballing in the next room. Well, I remember I walked into one of my teammates back in Geelong days, walked into Michael Mansfield's place and there's a big thing on the wall, Mick kicking the ball, and then going to the other room. Here he's tucking a mark. I see what you don't.
Great memories.
I see what you don't remember that you've played last week, mate. Oh, do you really need to put it up on the wall?
People come in, you need to remind them without having to say this. tell them.
It's like people that say, "Oh, I've got it all in my shed, in my games room." Yeah, and it's just photos of themselves everywhere. Like, what, seriously? Come on, guys.
Do you reckon you'd walk into Buddy Franklin's house and he'd have playing on repeat? I think AFL.com.au cut every single one of his. Thousand
yes.
goals.
It's 3.5 hours.
Yeah, it's 3.5 hours. I've watched.
Of course you are.
No, I only watched the first 580 goals. I don't watch after that. But do you reckon he's got that playing on repeat in his house?
Knowing Buddy, I don't think there'd be
Wouldn't
one football
so.
Thing there. The only photo I reckon I could. There might be a premiership photo from his Hawthorn days with Buddy and Raffy, I reckon.
Yep.
With Buddy, Raffy and Louis.
Louis, yeah.
That's what I reckon. There might be. That might be the only photo without. Going into his house and looking, I would imagine the rest would be all his family.
He's a humble superstar, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's not really a footy talker.
No, he just stays away from the limelight.
Which is staggering because when he was young, he was out and about all the time and all that, but he's settled down and unbelievable. He's been an unbelievable football story.
Well,
really.
He's got Gaz Senior in his sights. He'll probably go past with health.
Yeah.
He'll go past him this year. He needs another
potentially
31 goals.
Oh, yeah, he'll go past him this year. How many games did Gaz Senior play? 254?
248.
248.
And then Doug Wade on 1,057. So he could jump past a couple sort of before it's all said and done. I'm not sure he'll get past...
Not going to get past Lockett.
Jay Dunstall at 1,254.
Or Jay's, no. But what's amazing about that list is Gary Ablett played most of his career as a half forward. Mm. Like, yeah, he really went to full. Like, Lee Matthews kicked 900 goals.
Yeah.
He was mainly a rover that went forward.
Yeah, crazy, isn't
Gary
it?
Gary Ablett went to full forward, I think, and he was about 32.
Will we ever see this again? I know, like, there's been so much talk. We'll never see it again.
Not
will
unless
we?
The game changes. If the game goes back to what it was, we might. But if it continues to progress the way it is, and JJ knows this better than anybody as a key forward, you're not playing one-on-one anymore. Uh-huh. These blokes back then that you're talking about, they had one opponent.
They're
not playing against three.
And they had games where they'd kick like 20 goals in a game. Like, that doesn't happen.
Back then, those teams, they were high 20 goals.
Yeah.
That's a bad day, 20, the way the game was played.
To say ever... Who knows?
It's a bit cool.
The game, they might bring in crazy rules which allow forwards to kick plenty. But, I mean, what 65 wins to Coleman now.
Yeah.
These guys were kicking 90, 100, 110, 115 routinely. So you'd think it's unlikely and we'll savour it. And imagine how many he may have kicked if he hadn't had to put up with, two, three defenders and, guys flooding back and all those sorts of things. He'd probably be on 1,500.
So the last player to kick 100 goals is Buddy in 2008. In that same game, Fev ended up on 99.
Yeah.
So we had two full forwards then
that
both basically kicked 100 goals in one year. Since then, I'd love to get the breakup of what the goal kicker. I think Jack might have kicked 90 one year.
Yeah,
Josh, I reckon we'd be battling to get over 80.
Josh Kennedy kicked 80 in about 2016.
So you don't reckon we'll see a ton again in a season?
Oh, yeah, I think we will.
Yeah, but it'd be nice to.
So my view is we will see it because we have got so many talented footballers in the country. But we'll only see it if the game
allows us to see the
forwards playing with a bit more freedom than playing against three defenders, really, because that's what the good ones are doing.
So we need to the coaches to get together and be like, come on.
And they're the worst people to ask.
Yeah. Well, in that 2008 game, Clarko didn't even want Fev to get his.
Oh, I get that with Clarko. That's his personality.
Me too.
I get it. I didn't mind it, actually.
The coaches genuinely, I think all 18 of them, would prefer to stop a goal than score a goal. And until that mindset changes,
I reckon there's one exception to the rule, and his team's undefeated at the moment. Your mob. Oh. Sam Mitchell, I reckon, is all attack.
Well, at the moment, I mean, that score last night was the highest score that Hawthorn have kicked since 2018, which is incredible because Clarko, they were so dour under him. They just didn't score.
No, they didn't. And look, I think his mindset is, look, he'll get opened up. The Hawks are going to get opened up 100%. Badly the other way at times this year. But I think most people would prefer to see the way the Hawks are doing it at the moment. Mm. I mean, that was brilliant to watch last night.
Well, Sam Mitchell said it. He said, you know, it's some of the stats from tonight's game are not sustainable. We understand that, but it's the way we're going to try and play. So I think he certainly understands and acknowledges they're not going to kick 13 straight from set shots like they did last night, but they're going to have a crack at scoring. And if you're a Hawks fan, that's all you want to see.
And that's the thing. You want to get the members on the same journey as you. You want to bring everyone along on the ride. So you got to play that entertaining footy style, completely understanding that there are going to be times where you're going to get thrashed the other way.
Do you know what I laughed yesterday? I got a little message during the day that I think it came from, I don't know who sent it to me, but I think it was Ben Lyon. Anyway, I get a message to say that Sammy Hargraves called Collingwood's game style last year unwatchable during the call yesterday. Well, and the guy who was doing the special comments was Collingwood assistant coach Brenton Sanderson.
In charge of ball movement.
He was in charge of the ball movement.
Very awkward.
Sammy Hargraves has gone with that. Come on, Noham. What are you doing?
They like weren't that unwatchable last year,
yeah,
Collingwood.
I reckon
the St Kilda was worse.
You can think but you don't need to say it.
And they're both bad. They were both horrible to watch. Mainly, I think St Kilda was better to watch than
But the Pies now. Totally different story, isn't it?
They're going really well.
We haven't mentioned the Saints are a watch today. Yeah. If they don't offer much over there.
I think they will today.
Do you think they will?
Yeah,
I'm a bit worried. I'm worried.
Yeah.
Mick Malthouse hasn't missed them in the paper.
What did Mick say?
My old mate Bradley Croucher, luckily he's over in the West. He's not picking up the Herald Sun, but he's called Brad Crouch a pea shooter.
He doesn't hit
targets, doesn't defend.
Wow.
He's had a crack.
Okay. And Dan Hannanbury's the other concern. I mean, he just can't get his body right. He injured himself at training yesterday. No time frame on a return. It's another soft tissue.
Doesn't he know where to get injured?
You've got to feel.
He's been a bust for them. He was a great player for the Swans, but complete bust for St Kilda.
Does he need to maybe just give it up at this point? It's a hard one. And I know, you know.
Hand back a few sheets if you just hang in there.
Yeah, well, I don't think you'll be handing any sheets back.
See you at the deal.
But, yeah, I mean, it seems the deal. Of all the deals that they did in those trading of players, he's been the bomb of them, hasn't he, really?
Yeah.
He's been a bust.
Yeah, he certainly has. So St Kilda and Fremantle going head-to-head at Optus Stadium at 6:20pm Melbourne time later tonight. And then, of course, the other game is Richmond and GWS at the MCG at 3:20. Both of those sides looking for their first win of the season. Of course, we're at Marvel Stadium for North Melbourne and the West Coast Eagles here. First bounce of the ball, 1:10, so we're not far away. Stick with us here on Sunday Crunch Time. We'll talk a little bit more about that game on the other side of this break. Our talk back is for Kogan Mobile. Make the switch. Switch to Kogan Mobile. Crunch Time, thanks to Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
When the family can't decide on...
Want to witness the world's biggest football game? Head to iCanWin.com.au, predict Australia's score with a crystal ball, and it could be you and a friend at the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022 semi-finals, all thanks to McDonald's. Maccas, together and loving it. TNCs apply.